Welcome everybody. Told me that you just finishing up on the Simon Kofta as well. You gave me a couple of things that you asked me to speak about. Four I'm going to talk about for Chalav Yisrael, two for Community Yisrael, and one about butter. But please feel free to interrupt me. I'd rather not just keep on talking and talking. So feel free if you have questions. Okay, the first question was, is there anything different about Chalav Stam from the time when Igros Moshe wrote his tshuvas, many years ago, saying that people are allowed to eat it, as compared to now? So, in the third tshuva, the longest tshuva, the third tshuva, Ramosha asks a question on himself. He said, I told you that you're allowed to eat what we call Chol Stam. He doesn't call it that, but Chol Stam. He says, but people tell him that there's nobody looking at the farms at all. All the oversight is at the dairies, nothing at the farms at all. And Ramosha says a chiddush over there to say that Chol Yisrael is only also when he Gil Yad Yisrael. So the fact that no one's paying attention at the farms is not important. All that counts is whether they check on it at the bottling facility, where they put it into the milk into bottles or make it into cheese or things like that. So that's what he had said at that time. It's a big chiddush. Not everybody is accepting of that chiddush, even if they accepted the basic parts of Ramosha. So in recent years, you may know this already by now, I don't know, Rabbi Gordimer from the OU, he takes care of a lot of their dairy factories. He said, in fact, the government does go to the farms. It turns out at this point the government does go to the farms. The government even has rules that say you can't have other animals on the farm at all. Okay. Plus, they test the milk to make sure that there isn't any adulteration. Now, it happens to be something switched, so in that way it's better than what Ramosha said, in that they check even at the farms. On the other hand, at the dairy facility, there isn't any official requirement to say is make sure the milk came from a cow. There isn't such a requirement. So here Ramosha said the Ikka part is what goes on at the dairy, where they put the milk into the bottle. Actually, that's not what's going on now. If an inspector had reason to think that it was not coming from a cow, he for sure would make a to-do about it. But there's no official requirement of him to check that over there. But Lamai said, the thinking is that the inspectors do go look back at what happened to the records to see where the milk is coming from. So chances are they're probably doing what Moshe wanted anyhow. That's the truth. Okay. So what the more traditional thinking of why Chol Stam should be mutter because they check at the farms is stronger than it was then. The opposite, the checking at the dairy facility is probably equal or maybe a little worse. It's also worth bearing in mind the whole picture is Rav Moshe's heter is not to say that if the government watches, therefore it's mutter. That's not what Rav Moshe says. Rav Moshe says, if the government watches, then that, with other things, makes him a non-sahadi. Now we know that this is milk, that this milk is coming from a cow, and therefore it's mutter. The heter is not that the government watches makes it mutter. The government is not a mashgiach. But the government watching helps create the anan sahadi, and l'chara, that exists still like it does like 50 years ago, or however long ago the tshuvas were written. Now, in this regard, it's worth noting, there has been a little bit of a growing of camel milk industry in the United States, which probably did not exist at the time when Rav Moshe wrote tshuvas. It's a very specialized product. It's very expensive. It's not even easy to milk camels like it is cows. You know, the whole industry built around milking cows. So realistically, there's not a chance that someone's going to put that in. It costs who knows how much more, and it's not realistic anybody on a commercial level would do. But there is such a thing. That's another change that happened. There's also another thing, which is there are people who buy raw milk from farms. It's not legal to sell raw milk to the public, but you could buy it from a farm. If a person does that, I can't see why that should be mutter. Why Rav Moshe's heterim should fit to that case. A person just going over to a farm, basically going to a farm and say, hi, sell me, a container of milk. I don't see how that has any of the controls, the anan sahadi that Moshe was talking about. One last thing is, there are a little bit, some changes in the law that people thought might have affected what Rav Moshe said. It doesn't seem that that's correct. It seems that the law still remains in place of requiring that the milk come from cows. Now, from a completely different angle, is that this is a little on the side of what Moshe said. That is, there are people who say, well, if it's Chol Stam, then it's mutter, accepting what Moshe said. But there's been, just the way market forces work, there are dairy products that come from other countries. The status, whether a Moshe's Heter should apply in other countries, is very country-specific. Just yesterday, someone wanted to know about buying milk in Italy. Does a Moshe's Heter apply in Italy? So in each country, someone has to rethink the student says, does a Moshe's say apply in this country, and this country, and this country? And that question of taking halal style from other countries came up most dramatically of dairy products that come from India and China. Those are both countries where they operate very, very differently than business runs here in the United States. And most of the hashkafas, there was a meeting of different hashkafas to talk about it, and most of them are not happy applying Ramosha's Heter to those places. And most of them would not certify products or take products from there. But there are reputable hashkafas that do that. Which just to say is that if you go and buy Khalistan cookies, again, I'm not talking about a bottle of milk, you buy cookies that have in it dairy ingredients in it, it may include things like that whose Khalistan status is not as clear. Okay, not because there's a problem if it would have been made in Wisconsin, that's fine. But it's made in other countries where not everyone might agree that that thing really qualifies for what you said. And again, the hashkafas take different positions on it, in particular on the stuff that comes from India and China, which is like most dramatic, but other countries as well. There are questions at each country to make sure that if it qualifies for a Moshe said. Okay, I'm going to go on to another question. If you have any questions on this, let me know. If not, I'm going to continue on.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
In general, do the, let's say, cookies like you're describing, would the milk be from liquid milk, or would it be from the milk salad, the, what is it called, the dry milk, which would perhaps, be more cow under vena,
It depends on the product. I can't give an answer to the question. It depends what it is. Do they use actual milk or do they use powdered milk? But you could call, if that makes a difference, you could call the hashkacha and say, many of the hashkacha, the CRC would, and other hashkachas will be transparent with people. So if you call them and say, hi, I want to buy these cookies, can you tell me if the milk in the powdered milk or liquid milk, they would probably answer the question for you. Be able to tell you if that made a difference to you. I hear someone talking. It's hard for me to hear.
Every product you buy that's whole stock, you need to call up the hashkacha to ask if it's coming from China or Italy.
No, it's something I'm throwing out there to say is, I didn't say you shouldn't drink milk from Italy. I just said a shiloh came up about an individual wanted to buy. I think you need to think it through and realize that it's not the same, position that everyone's going to take on everything. If you buy a bottle of actual milk, they didn't bring that from Italy. No one's bringing bottles of milk from a different country. But what happens if you buy like our cookies or something else, pastries? Who knows where the dairy product come from? It's a market issue, So what should you do? That's a fair question. But how you should deal with it? I'm just throwing out to you that just the way globalization is and the way business runs, things have changed from most of the time in that way. It's a little bit of a change in that sense,
If you would, the Ramayas after, in regards to, let's say, other cottage cheese or yogurt or other things that, mixed in, I would imagine there's no way you could ever buy that or stuff up. When it comes to Ramayas, could I go and buy a bottle of milk that is absolutely not stuff up from a regular grocery store?
Okay, so now you have, this is a separate question, which is, accepting that we eat Chol Stam, what about buying a bottle of milk? Okay, that's, so now, this is not a Chol Yisrael question. Now this is a question of, are there any other issues that there might go on in the factory that might go on there? We tell people that it's better to buy it with hashkacha, but if not, you can buy plain milk without. If you can't find regular milk, you can buy it. If you can't find it with hashkacha, you can buy it without. The concern, the things that might go wrong are not so significant. So it's better to buy it with hashkacha, but otherwise, you could just buy plain bottled milk. You could buy.
If I buy cookies that have a, I'll use an example, CRC, and I'm going to know that there's no products that are coming from India, no, that's what the CRC is not for.
Correct.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yes, but not every cookie you buy is going to be CRC. There's a lot of reputable hashkachas, Okay, let's go on to our next thing. The next thing was about DA cows. Okay, DA cows DA stands for displaced abomasum. It's a certain condition that has, the abomasum is the cava, it's the fourth stomach that the cows have, and it's on the right side. It's supposed to be on the right side. But if it gets displaced, it falls out of place, and it either falls to the bottom or to the left side, then that causes all kinds of problems for the cows. And that in itself would not be a passionate issue if a cow had a displaced abomasum. That in itself would not be an issue. The problem is, it's not very good for the cow, and therefore they do a surgery to correct that issue. And the surgery seemingly makes the animal into a trefa. I meant to bring it with me. I don't have it. I'm sorry. There's someone named Romanus Blumenfrucht. You may have heard his name. He's a person who recently, maybe a year ago, printed a sefer. It's called Chol of Trefa. It's a really wonderful work. It really is. And it's approximately, I might be wrong, 20 prakim long. And the first 18, the first, everything to the last two prakim is to explain the different shayos about whether the surgery makes the animal into a trefa. And if the kol ever wants trefas, it's worthwhile to have it just for the hilchos trefas of it. And most people assume that the surgeries that are done do make the animal into a trefa. Now, but then the last two prakim is, okay, let's say the animal is a trefa because of the surgery, now what do we do because of that? So he first I'll tell you what he found, and then I'll tell you what people do. He found that a lot of effort has gone into veterinarians to prevent the cows from having this issue. Okay, and if they work on feed and other things to prevent the problem, plus when they find an animal that has a DA, they tend to get rid of it. Okay, they sell it to salami, they shecht it, they don't tend to keep them around also. So he found it's very not a tremendous amount of these cows actually producing milk that have this issue with them. the amount, it could be bottled with shishim or could not be bottled in a farm, but it was a very reasonably small amount of cows that have it that are actually producing milk. Now, so now as far as this issue, there's a big difference between Chol V'Sol and non-Chol V'Sol. I'll do the non-Chol V'Sol first. The non-Chol V'Sol looks at it and says, essentially says is, let's pick a number. Let's say 3% of the cows out there have this problem. Well, that's a random number. Maybe it's 3% or 5% or 2%. Let's say 3%. Well, there's a lot of cows that have a much more obvious and serious trachea, which is they have sirchus in their lungs. Okay, that's what we check for when we check the animal. We check to see if it has a sirchus in its lungs. Okay, that's 10 to 15% of the cows have that. Well, we drink milk from all cows. Why do we drink milk from cows that have sirchus? If the animal's a trachea because it has a sirchus, the milk is not kosher either. And the answer is, because we follow the roiv. Roiv count. Cows do not have, are not trefas, and therefore you're allowed to drink the milk unless it's Efshel Levura B'Kal. If there's a way to check to easily know that the animal is not a trefa, you have to do that. But if you can't tell, like, you can tell when you shecht an animal, you can check if it is. But if you're just getting milk from it, you have no way to know. So the din is you're allowed to eat it. You assume you got it from a cow that didn't have that problem. So the same thing works for the cows that have a displaced abomasum. Let's say 3% of the cows have that. I have no way of knowing whether my milk came from this cow or from that cow. There's no reasonable way to figure that out. And therefore, I'm allowed to eat it. Just like I eat animals, I know that 10, 15% of the cows are trefas for other reasons. So just like I'm allowed to eat those animals, I'm allowed to eat these also. and since it's not Efshel Levura B'Kal, I don't have to worry about it. I'm allowed to eat it. And that's in fact what happens with the Chol Stam products. There's nothing. These cows are not removed from herds, and they give milk like every other cow does. For Chol V'Sol, it's very different, because Chol V'Sol, by its nature, means that there's a Shomer Shabbos person comes to the farm to watch the milking. Well, he can pick out the cows that have the surgery. In two ways you can pick them out. First of all is, modern farms all have computerized records of every cow. They can tell you everything about this cow from the day he was born, maybe even before. And it's easy to pull out the cows. The cows have tags in their ears, so you know which cow it is. So cow 1, 2, 3, 4 is the one who had the surgery. Let's get them out. The second way to tell is because most of the procedures that are done for them leave a scar on the side of the animal. And if you've seen it beforehand, you could walk past the cows and notice the one that has the scar in it. You know who had the surgery to it. Okay. So in Chol V'Sol, and there's a mashgiach there. There's somebody standing there who's making sure it's Chol V'Sol. So there, all of a sudden, it is Efshel Levura. It's possible to get them out. So the standard for Chol V'Sol is that they do remove all the cows that have this kind of surgery, and the milk that from in the Chol V'Sol farm will not have any DA cows in it. It's part of the registry stuff. So this is not a Chol V'Sol issue, but it happens to be that Chol V'Sol has that advantage. They have a person standing there, he could get those cows out, and that's in fact what every Chol V'Sol that I know does. In fact, does that.
But isn't there a small, at least there a person who doesn't drink milk? Do that while we're
so, so That is true. It's not because of the DA cows. That has to do with the bigger question that I said to you. I said 10-15% of the cows are trephus because they have circus in their lungs. So he says, well, if 10% of the cows have trephus in their lungs, that's okay. If you go to a cow farm, you're allowed to assume you got a kosher animal. You are allowed to. But in a modern farm, what they do is they mix all that milk together. So there's now in every 1,000 liters or 1,000 gallons of milk, we have 100 gallons of treif and 900 gallons of kosher. Okay, so the din is, min b'mina, lach b'lach is bota b'shishim. It needs to have 60 times as much. That's not shishim. So how come you're not allowed to eat it? It's a mixture of shishim. Okay? So that's the reason why he doesn't drink milk. The reason to answer that is a little complicated. Why most people do not agree with that thinking. That's a little more complicated. When you guys learn Teruvis, we'll come back and we'll do that again. Okay? When you get into Teruvis, it's a Hilchos Teruvis question, not a Cholov Zor question. Yes?
Is there
an advantage? Well, if a person... So the thing is like this. When we say Efshel Levrui Bekal, you're mechuyev to not follow Roiv. So if I have two milks in front of me, and one is Cholov Yisrael, and one is not Cholov Yisrael, so basically I have a way to be Mevar. That's essentially what I could do. I could be Mevar and take that one. If everything being equal, then I would do that. Yes. But it's not necessarily that equal. You know, if that's assuming everything being equal, then I should take the one that's Cholov Yisrael, because I know that they pulled out those karmic cows. You know? Okay. Now, another question, another one of the things that was asked was, is there any reason to be more makel about infant formula to make it not Chol V'Yisrael than other kinds of Chol of Stam, other kinds of other people in my house, we won't necessarily eat Chol Stam, but what about giving infant formula? So, actually, one issue that someone had mentioned before is that there are those who are makel about powdered milk, who say things that are in powdered form are not included in the Isser, so that's definitely something to think about. Most do not agree with that, but is that definitely a point? There are those who hold like that. That's definitely something to think about. But on a more simple level, there's a seemingly a better reason, and that is there's a big difference of opinion. If you learn Halachah, maybe it's in Halacha Beis, it says there that we treat Chol Akum is treated like regular Isser. Okay, you have to kasher, maybe it's in Halacha Beis. You have to kasher just like any other Isser. Okay, but there's a question is, when people who eat Chol V'Yisrael, who eat in America, eat Chol V'Yisrael, why do they eat Chol V'Yisrael? Is that because they say they treat the Chol Stam as Chol Akum? They say, no, this is treif. The Shulchan Aruch says it's treif. You have to kasher your kelim through it. It's 100% treif. Like the Gemara says, if there's no yid watching it, then it's treif. Or is it saying is that, you know, the Ikra din is that it's mutter. The Chassanish says it's mutter because he holds it to be chodesh. Or Ramosha says even a coin, even coin chasam sofer, it's going to be mutter. And I'm just being machmir. Ramosha says it's good to be machmir on this thing. Okay, so that difference of opinion essentially splits between the Litvish community and the Chassidish community. Okay, Litvish community, Rav Henkin already had said this, tends to see it as a chumrah. We eat what we call the traditional type of Chol V'Yisrael. We're being machmir to do that, but min hadin we hold it's really mutter. And think about all the hashkachas that you know, the big reputable hashkacha. I mean, think about the CRC. At the CRC, I think every single one of the rabbis at the CRC eats only Chol V'Yisrael. Okay? I think every single one of them in their house only eats Chol V'Yisrael. But we give hashkacha to lots of Chol Stam products. But how can we do that? How can I give a hashkacha to them that's not kosher? The answer is, because really it is kosher. We want to be machmir personally on doing that, so we treat it as a chumrah. But as far as we give hashkacha, why wouldn't you give hashkacha? It's perfectly kosher for those people. That tends to be the literature approach to this. And so those kind of people would say is, so if my baby needs it, and that's the formula that I have to give my baby, so I'm going to give it to him. I mean, so it's just a chum anyhow, so I'm going to give it to the baby. But the Chassidish community tends to take the opinion that says, no, it's 100% treif. It's completely not kosher. If it's not kosher, why would you give your babies and it's not kosher? So, I mean, if it's a sakana, there's nothing else to feed him. Okay, so we'll give him something treif. I mean, what are you going to do? Yeah, that's the only thing to feed the baby. You know, our baby needs Tramadol. I don't know, he needs a special formula that's all they can eat. Okay, so of course we'll give it to him. But short of that, then they won't give it to him. Okay? So that comes from a difference of opinion, whether you think this is treif, or you think it's just a chumrah to avoid that kind of a product. Okay? That's how I see it. Okay. And the last thing about Chol V'Yisrael was, someone wanted to know, the question was sent to me was, is there a mashgiach tamidi when you make Chol V'Yisrael? Okay. So the din is, it's right in the Gemara, that You do not have to have a Mashgiach Tamidi. Yotze v'nichnas works perfectly fine for making milk Kol Yisrael. That's enough. That's considered Yisrael Ro'ehu. Even though he does a match literally every second, Yotze v'nichnas is considered Yisrael Ro'ehu. But the Prichalder says, he says, you know, that only, you can only do that if there's only one guy on the farm. He says, but if there are, if there's more than one guy on the farm, then one guy will be, could be the lookout while the other guy is, you know, adulterating your milk. So one guy will stand in the driveway, and he sees that the yid's not coming. He'll tell the other guy, no problem, you can put in the horse's milk now when there's nobody watching. So the Prichalder says, if there's two guys in the farm, you cannot have Yotzei v'nichnas because the one will tell the other one. Okay, so the however, Lamaisa is that if there's no trait readily accessible, there's no animals there that are readily accessible. I told you even before, the government doesn't even let you have other animals on the farm. Okay, and in practice, there's no realistic way for them to add other milk in. So then, this Prichalder, most assume that the Prichalder does not apply. There could be even more than one guy on the farm if there's no realistic way for him to get milk, trade milk to put into there. However, that's only true if there's one farm. Okay, but if you have, there are situations where the same Chol Yisrael production is going on five farms, and they're half an hour apart from each other. Well, guess what? They're half an hour apart from each other, and you know we have telephones these days. So if I'm on farm A, and I'm standing there, the guy from here says to the guy on farm B, guys, you're safe at least a half an hour, because the guy's over here. It takes a half an hour even to show up at your place. So then what the Prichalder says would apply. Okay, or if the rabbi checks into a hotel that's 45 minutes away from the farm, then all of a sudden, now this idea of having two goyim, which didn't occur, how could that be for the Prichalder? She's far away, it doesn't work. But nowadays, of course it does. So the person at the hotel or at one farm will tell the other one, hey, the rabbi's out, you're safe for an hour, 45 minutes, you're safe. In that case, l'chari, that should not count as Yotzei v'nichnas, because of the concern that one will tip off the other one that the rabbi can come. In that case, you should have more than one mashgiach. You should have more than one mashgiach. This way, there's no way to know, because one guy's here, one, the other guy's floating around, makes it taka like Yotzei v'nichnas. Okay, that's the end of my Chol Yisrael things. If you have questions, or we'll move on. Okay, I hear a voice. Got to speak up. No, not good enough. So whoever that is, got to come a little closer to the mic. I didn't say that. I said if the farms are far apart from each other, if they're far apart from each other, where it's possible, if you give the guy so much space that, you know, from the time I get from here to the year, he could do something wrong, then you would need to have another mashgiach. But if the farms are closer to each other, then that's okay. Okay, so you want to say, I'm machmir chol stam, but I allow chol, I would eat some that's made of deer equipment. So, the first thing is, what I mentioned before, Rav Henkin, that's the shayla Rav Henkin was talking about. Rav Henkin says, people who eat only chol v'sor don't have to worry about the kalim from the other people. As part of it saying there's only a chumrah, it says not to worry about the kalim. But there's another thing, and that is, there's a big difference between my eating in someone's house. If I only eat Chol Yisrael and I come to your house and you cook me up a pot of spaghetti, that's one kind of question, as compared to dairy equipment in a factory, where it's a very different question. Because there, realistically, in almost every case, the amount of time that's in the kalim is going to be bottle. And realistically, this now it's not a Chol Yisrael question. Now it's a matter of, let's say the Chol Akum, Chol Sam was trade as anything. How realistic is it that that's going to make a difference to the food that I'm eating? Okay, it's most likely that it will not make a difference. So in addition to saying, well, maybe it's Chol Stam and it's not such a big deal, I only think it's a chumrah, it's extra is, the fact that on dairy equipment, chances are that there's no bleed, realistic amount of bleed in my food anymore.
Based on what the Rav just said about Chol Yisrael, about different farms, people running around, how would that apply, and I know it's a different shadow, but how do I know, let's say, if a Rabbi Master goes to a plant, how does he not know that the guy knows that he's probably not coming back for the next month? So how does he know that in between every single trip that a rabbi makes to a plant, which I can still share, there's not going to be something going on. They know, for sure, I'm at least 15 days before he comes back.
Okay, so the answer is, first is that the best is that the Mashiach is not on such a schedule, and then the fact that they think he might come back tomorrow. But you're right. With time, they get to learn that the rabbi doesn't come so often. That's true. But
comes on Saturday.
Right, but the truth is that Hashgacha in factory settings, part of choosing how often to come is how easy and realistic is it for someone to change things. Factories are not like home kitchens. They don't just switch on a second and say, oh, instead of this, we'll switch that for that other thing. Right? It's not, things don't switch so easily from one day to the next. So a person coming once in a while, that's part of judgment of how often should we come, but you come based on how realistic is it that someone's going to really make a big change over here. You know, I know there's a facility where they have an ingredient that's sensitive, and it comes in small containers. Okay? In other words, they get it in, I don't want to say retail containers, but something like retail-sized containers. Neither was a much more serious concern that they might switch it. Because they're not getting truckloads worth of stuff, they're getting small bottles of it, you know? So there they said to them, if you want hashgacha, you're going to have so much stock of kosher stuff that we know you'll never have an incentive to run out of it. Whenever we come, we want to see lots of it here, so, and we make sure you keep using it, that this way we don't think you're going to run out to buy another one, you know? Okay, let's move on to Gvina Sakum. Okay.
So just one small question.
Go ahead.
The Rashi says that there's a time, God will be machmir, but even though you could be makhmir, if you want, even though you have, he says there's an end to be machmir, if the Rashi says it's not tzadi, and you have agents, so what more do you need?
Do you want to know why he's saying that a person should, it's better to be machmir? I assume that it's because it's not traditional. If you open up the Shulchan Aruch and you open up the Gemara, it says you should eat milk when the Yid watches it. That's what the Gemara says. That's a simple understanding. So he's realizing, what I'm saying is a chiddush. This is not, when you open the Shulchan Aruch, it didn't say anything about that. So he says, you know, so you want to do it the traditional way, there's definitely advantage to doing it like that. But the din, Shulchan Aruch says, that's the din. And that's how he works just as good. It's like you saw it. It's good enough, you know.
What does that mean? It's
a fair question. I'll just say to you is that the world is not so perfectly black and white. Okay, things are not always exactly yes and no. This is not a computer code with a zero or a one. You know, something that's in between over here, and that's what Rashi is telling us. A judgment is that, you know, yes, I think that it's more than you could eat it. It's perfectly fine to eat it, but if you want to do it the simple traditional way, that's what you should do also. You know? Okay, let's move on to Gvina Sakum. Okay. Here are two things that I was asked to mention. The first is, if a Yid owns the rennet, is that good enough to make the cheese be Gvinis Yisrael? So, there's a well-known machlokes between the Ramah and the Shach of what it takes to make Gvinis Yisrael. Chol Yisrael, it says in the Mishnah, a Yid has to wash the milking. That we know. We know what you have to do. What do you do to make Gvinis Yisrael? So the Ramah says, Gvinis Yisrael is exactly like Chol Yisrael. They're in the same Mishnah. It's just like Chol Yisrael you have to watch, Gvinis Yisrael you have to watch also. That's what makes it Gvinis Yisrael. He watches, meaning he watches to make sure. He doesn't just watch. He watches to make sure that they don't eat in Kavis Nevela, Trey Frenet, and therefore that's what makes it Gvinis Yisrael. And the Shach says the opposite. He says the Mishnah didn't say the same wording that it said for Chol Yisrael. It's a different thing. It says Gvinis Yisrael. It doesn't say quote Chol Yisrael. It says Chol of Shecholvay Akam with Yisrael Re'ehu. And so the Shach says to be Gvinis Yisrael means it has to belong to the Yid, a Jew's cheese. Gvinis Yisrael, the Jew's cheese. So if a Yid owns it, that's what makes it Gvinis Yisrael. And as like an aside, you can also, the Yid could participate in making it, that also works. Okay, but the grill, so to speak, Gvinis Yisrael is if a Yid owns it, that works it. Okay, so the Achronim say that he doesn't have to actually own the cheese, he can own the milk, he can own the rennet, there's all kinds of different things he could own, and that's considered the Yid's Gvina, that's enough to qualify as the Yid's Gvina. Now, the Shach clearly doesn't hold like the Ramah. That's his whole point, is that I don't agree with the Ramah. Watching it is not good enough. The Ramah L'Chaira would not hold like the Shach. It's not clear so much, but L'Chaira does not agree with the Shach if he just owned it. Because Ramah, where would such a thing come from? The Ramah has no right in such a din. He says it's just like Chol Yisrael, so you have to watch it. Owning milk doesn't make it kosher, and owning cheese doesn't make it kosher either. Okay? So, according to the Shach, if a Yid would own the rennet, that would make the cheese Chol Yisrael. I'm sorry, Gvinis Yisrael. But first of all, most of the later Poskim accept what the Rambam says, that the Ikkar HaDin is that watching is what counts. Owning is not good enough. And second is that most people consider it an obvious, clear harama to say is a Yid will own the rennet, and he gives his rennet for free to a company who makes cheese and never gives him anything back for it. And it's just a game to say to the person, you own the rennet. Okay, it's your rennet, Rabbi. This rennet belongs to you. We give you for free our rennet. You give it back to us for free. You let us use it for free, and you never take anything out of it. So it's such a harama that most people would not go along with that. Most people would not consider that to be good enough. So in theory, if the Yid owned the rennet, that would be good enough, according to the Shach. But first of all, doing that commercially is not considered appropriate or acceptable. And most of the place can hold like the Rambam anyhow that the Yid has to watch it. Okay? And that leads us right to the second question. And the second question was, why is it that we don't see much Chol of Stam kosher cheese? Okay, and what the question really is that there's plenty of Chol of Stam kosher cheese, but all of that kosher cheese that's Chol of Stam is all made for Jewish people. It all has brand names that are like Oneg. We give Hashkacha to a brand name Oneg. Okay, it's made for Jewish people. I mean, they don't care who buys it, but it's obviously directed at Jewish people. You don't see your everyday store brand of cheese being Gvinas Yisrael. Okay, and in other words, as opposed to if you walk into the beverage aisle or the cookie aisle or pickles, all the national brands are all kosher. So why is it that there isn't more Chol of Stam in the national brands that should be Gvinas Yisrael? Okay, and the answer to that is that because the requirement to make Gvinas Yisrael is to have a Yid there all the time, you have to have a Yid watching it. A Yid has to watch what's going on, and a Yid, according to the Shach, has to participate in making the cheese also. So there's a very considerable expense to make kosher cheese. Okay, it's not harder to make it. The ingredients don't cost more, basically. But there's this huge cost to have a Mashgiach standing there all the time. Okay, and it's a constant. You keep making new batches all the time. So for Jewish people to have cheese, so it costs a little bit more for the cheese than everybody else, because we have to pay for this Mashgiach, so you're willing to pay for that. You want American cheese, you want, I don't know, mozzarella cheese, you'll pay an extra 10 cents a pound. But a national brand is not willing to add that cost to make it be worth, cost more for everybody, in order to have some of it be kosher, and that's why, as a rule, it isn't. Now, before we go on, what you will find is, soft cheeses, there's loads of soft cheese in national brands, like cottage cheese and yogurts, that have hashkafas on them, and that's because most people assume that soft cheeses do not need to be Gvinas Yisrael. There are hashkachas that don't, but most of the hashkachas assume that soft cheeses do not need Gvinas Yisrael. So those are kosher just like anything else. There's lots of cottage cheeses out there. I don't know, sour cream, cottage cheese, yogurt. Those that are kosher in national brand, because it doesn't cost particularly more to have a hashkacha for that. But we're talking about hard cheeses now. What's happened in recent years is that there were some very large cheese companies that they calculated that even having a mashgiach there all the time, that means 24 hours a day, it would be worth it for them, and the price of cheese wouldn't go up so much. It was worth it for them to make their cheese kosher, even though that meant they'd have to have two or three full-time mashgiachim, because, I mean, a guy can't work 24 hours a day. So they have to have a rotation of people there all the time. Even so, it was worthwhile financially to have it, and it would not affect the cost enough. And they said, so they came to the hashgachas and says, we want to make our cheese Gvinas Yisrael. It would be Chol Stam, but it would be Gvinas Yisrael. We want to make it on a national level. Okay, not just ones that are directed at Jewish people. So, but they ran into a problem. And the problem was that these plants operate 7 days a week, and you're not allowed to make cheese on Shabbos. A Yid is not allowed to make cheese on Shabbos. So the Yid, how is the Yid going to throw in the rennet on Shabbos? How is he going to push the button or tip over the bucket to put in the rennet? You're not going to make cheese on Shabbos. So that was going to be a deal breaker, because he can't be kosher for 6 days. It wasn't going to work. So the Hashgachas that were involved reconsidered their positions about that. And as they said, as I mentioned to you before, most of the place can hold like the Rambam, that it's enough for Yid to watch cheese making. He doesn't have to participate or own it. And therefore, they changed their rules and said it's okay if the Yid just watches the making of the cheese, even if he doesn't participate. So the Mashgiach stands there 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, there's someone standing there while they're making cheese. But he does not throw in the rennet, at least not on Shabbos. I don't know if they do it even during the week, but for sure not on Shabbos. Could someone mute my father, please? Okay, thank you. So they switched to saying that what they thought was the Ikra Din was like the Rambam. So, in fact, nowadays, there is more cheese that's Holostam, that's Gvinis Yisrael, on a national level, like national brands. There is more of it. It's true there is more nowadays, but it's not the same standard that there used to be. Okay, so the original question was, why isn't there more? So the original reason was because it's very expensive. It ended up raising the prices for everybody. Now there actually is some of it more available, but that is not made to the same standard that used to be done for a million years before. Okay, any questions? Talk up a little louder.
Does he put in the rent at 6 days a week?
I'm not sure about that. He could, in theory he could. Whether he actually does that, I'm not sure. And they depend on the hashkacha. That's a good question.
I have another interesting question. Does the hashkacha have okay, which you know does not enjoy reciprocity by the rest of the hashkacha world, they have one that share on Jesus. Do they hang their head at anything? Do they have a scar at all?
Their official position is that they hold like the Chachmin or Varna, that you don't have to have Gvinis Yisrael. Okay? It's not Gvinis Yisrael at all. But it's really, it's much worse than that. So it's not even in the running, even if it wasn't for cheese. It's not just a debate about whether Chachmin or Varna, should we agree to that there's no din of Gvinis Yisrael in America, you know. Just Hashkacha-wise, it's whatever. It's not anywhere near the standard that anybody would accept. So.
I just wanted cheese.
Yeah. Excuse me?
I just wondered about the cheese.
Right. Okay. Okay, and our last topic is butter. Okay, the question is there any reason to specifically insist on Chol Yisrael butter? So, some people, the Shulchan Aruch brings two different days about it, you know, and the Ikra Din is like the Mekilim. So some people say, well, it's true that the Din is that you could be Mekil, but nowadays you shouldn't do it because the Shulchan Aruch says you could be Mekel because there's no, it's not milk and it's not cheese, so it's not in either of those takanas, and there's no concern of tzuchsuch and chalav in it either, because they're going to be batal, so you're good, so you can have it. Okay, so Lamai said, some people said, you know, maybe we should be machmir because nowadays butter includes other ingredients. It doesn't just have cream in it, it has to start a distillate, and they have some other things into it also, and those things are kosher sensitive. They might even be halakim for that matter, but they're kosher sensitive, and therefore you shouldn't have them, and they would not be built to b'shishim. Started this slate particularly would not be built to b'shishim. So that's what some people want to say. But Lamaisa, when we asked Rabbi Reese about it, he said, listen, the butter itself does not have any concerns. It's not milk, and it's not cheese, so it doesn't have either of those takanas, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's completely mutter. Now, you have a question is, well, maybe they added to the butter something else. Okay, if your question is whether they added something else to the butter, so you need hashkacha for that. Okay, get a mashgiach to make sure, just like if you want to eat pickles or cucumbers or potato chips, anything you want to eat, you want to make sure there aren't treif ingredients in it. Okay, so you have a hashkacha to make sure there's no treif ingredients in it. That's not a Chol Yisrael requirement. That's not a Gvinis Yisrael requirement to have that. That's just a general kashrus requirement. Thing. Make sure they didn't put star and distillate. Well, the star and distillate they put in is kosher. Okay, go for it. So make sure that they did that. So get a hashkacha to watch on that. But that has nothing to do with Chol Yisrael. And therefore, what he said is that if a person is having, if the butter is just plain butter, it doesn't have milk added to it, that would have questions of Chol Yisrael. It's just butter, just plain, you know, cream and salt. Then there's no concern of Chol Yisrael. We might tell you to get hashkacha to make sure there aren't other ingredients, but that's not a Chol Yisrael issue per se. Now, related to that is that, you know, butter is made from cream. It's made from what we call sweet cream. Sweet cream means that when milk comes out of the cow, before you homogenize it, it's got cream in it that rises up to the top of the bucket. You know, if you put it into a pail, into a container, the cream goes to the top. If you don't homogenize it, that's what happens. And that cream is called sweet cream. That cream that comes off the butter is called, off the milk is called sweet cream. And that's what you typically make butter out of. There's another thing called whey cream. That is, after you make cheese, the leftover, the part of the milk that doesn't become cheese is, we call it whey. It has some cream in it, has some fat in it, should I say. And that fat is called whey cream. OK, You could make butter out of that whey cream also. Excuse me, out of that fat, you can make edible. So that is kosher sensitive. Not a salt salt issue. It's a general kosher sensitivity. So a person needs to be careful about that. It's a reason to have hashgacha to make sure they didn't use whey cream and they use only sweet cream. Now, the reason why would somebody use whey cream instead of sweet cream? There's two reasons. One is it's cheaper. Okay, that's a simple reason to use it. Okay, but the second reason is it actually tastes better. Okay, and because there's this really unusual, unexpected fact about making butter, and that is the finest butter is called double A, and then comes grade A, and then grade B, and I don't know, maybe there's grades better below that. And the grading has to do with the taste that the butter has. The fresher the taste is, the better it gets graded. Well, lo and behold, the fresher the taste is the less that people want to eat it. Okay? The fresher taste is not the most desirable taste. As it becomes more, starts to spoil, that actually has a taste that people prefer. So, the grade B butter tastes better. Most people consider that to taste better than the grade A or double A butter. So, whey cream, which is not as good butter, actually tastes better when you make butter out of it. It has more of a cheesy taste to it, and people consider that to be taste better. So that's one reason they would use it, but it happens to be also, there's another thing, people will do things to add things to the regular butter to give it that taste like the more rancid butter, go figure. So those are kosher concerns in general. But as far as the butter per se, as far as the chol v'shol shaboy, as long as it's just cream and salt, which it typically is, then it doesn't pose a chol v'shol problem, it's just a general kosher issue. Okay, I'm out of the things I was supposed to ask about. If you guys have any questions on these things or general, you can ask me, go ahead. Okay, speak up wherever you are. I can't hear you.
What's the conscious concern on whey
butter? On whey cream? On whey cream. Okay, so whey cream is the leftovers from making cheese. There are three different issues that could be wrong with whey cream. One is if you made the cheese with animal rennet, not with kosher rennet, but if it was made with animal rennet, so the Chasam Sofer says that not only is the rennet a maimed on the cheese, on the curd, it's also considered a maimed on the rennet, on the whey as well. So the whey would be considered treif because it had a treif maimed to it. Okay, if it had made with animal rennet. That's one thing. The second thing is that cheeses that are made at above yatzel at this point, let me back up. When you make cheese, you take milk and you add rennet to it, and you have it at a very specific temperature. The temperature has part to do with what kind of cheese you're going to end up with. Most cheeses that we have are made at below yatzel at this point. But a number of the cheeses are made above yatzel at this point. The setting of the cheese is at over yatzel at this point. And if that happens, then it's a question that there may be bleias from the curd, the cheese, which is gvinas akam, into the whey, which is not gvinas akam. So that would be another way that the whey would become not kosher. It's not clear that that's true, but we work with that assumption that it could make it not kosher. And the last is that there are cheeses, particularly mozzarella cheese, that after they're made into a cheese, after the cheese is a block of cheese, then they cook it as a way of making it more stretchable. Okay, like, you know how mozzarella cheese is very pliable. And when they cook it, they cook it in water. The water that they cook it in ends up having a lot of fat and protein in it. Because think about it, you cook cheese in it, it's going to get full of stuff. That water gets mixed back into the whey as part of the process in the plant. So if the mozzarella cheese, of course, is not kosher, unless it's made special, so the whey might have cooked water mixed back into it, which would make it not kosher. Okay, so those are three ways that the three methods that the whey could be not kosher. Any other questions? Okay. If you come up with something tomorrow, you can call me back. Feel free. Good to speak to you guys. Yo, you have a question still? Go ahead. If someone's saying something, I don't hear it. No, I'm hearing nothing.